every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
Your body's filling with adrenaline right now, whether you know it or not. Your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. Your neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. And do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
Listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Yeehaw! Hey, good evening, everybody. It's Mitch. I'm setting in here for Chicago Brew tonight. Chicago Brew has to do a little work overtime, and he's not in position. So we're here with Tom Rogers. Did several great shows here on Revolution Radio. And hey, Tom, how you doing over there?
Well, I think we're okay.
All right. Well, I more than understand. I loved your website. Was it Gassing America?
Correct.
And because, you know, I work in the building trades, and I tell you, the fungus and the dirt and the vapors and the fumes that are in new homes, people don't realize how toxic that stuff is. I was really amazed myself at the lack of safety when it came to, you know, what is actually gassing off within your own house. And many people really may not even understand what I'm talking about. Can you explain a lot of that to us? I know you're well versed in that stuff.
Well, I shouldn't be as well versed. I should be just a happy camper going along, enjoying life without dealing with the situations that have been created by the industry.
Absolutely.
But when a family comes to you desperate, asking for an answer as to why their baby is at death or is being threatened by this, you know, they're being threatened through the state to take that child away because the child, quote, appears to be neglected or abused. Then, of course, your peace and happiness kind of disappears. And that's what's happened to me in the last, 20 years. I've been doing case after case. I thought I was going to be retired and just having fun fishing or whatever. But a couple of ladies knocked on my door in 2001, and they were both in tears, and they were saying, "You said, you know, they knew me well, so they said, Tom, can you help us?" And I said, "Well, how can I help you?" And they said, "Well, we don't know, except that the state has taken away our baby and grandchild. It was a mother and grandmother. And all we know is we were, how to say, inspired or just motivated to contact you." What was really interesting is neither one of them knew I'd worked in pediatric pathology decades before. But after a couple of weeks of me being involved in their case, I began to realize I was hearing the common indicators of environmental poisons. When I actually got to examine their living situation, I discovered that their furnace had been vented out the side of their house, which is quite frankly legal if it's done properly. But in this case, the family's furnace exhaust was 11 inches away from an opening, allowing air to come back into the house when the wind was the right direction. When I had identified that problem, it took me 8 months of doing battle in the court to finally get the court to admit to the fact that it was not the family that was causing the illness of the child. In fact, they'd had a baby die the year prior, and they did not know at that time. They were brought into court. They were charged with negligent homicide, but then for some reason, the judge dropped the case. And then the next winter, the family had another baby, and that's the baby they lost to the state for a period, and that's where they had come to me. So, you know, I had no idea that this kind of nonsense was going on. However, back in the 50s and 60s and the 70s, when I was working in, you know, in medicine or pathology, we would automatically check for carbon monoxide or other environmental poisons if a person came in and seemed to have flu-like symptoms. Ooh, flu-like. Wow, that's interesting. Flu-like symptoms and no fever. So we would figure they were being exposed to some toxin. The most common toxin, of course, was carbon monoxide, followed by the other common toxin, formaldehyde. So anyway, when I got into this case and I realized this family had been subjected to the fumes of their own furnace, I presented the facts and the evidence. I'm talking about photographic and physical evidence, including a report from the state itself that this family was being subjected to carbon monoxide poisoning. Like I say, it took me 8 months back and forth in the court. And then finally, the way I got that to happen was not through the court, but through the public. And ultimately, I was frustrated because the court was not willing to accept our evidence, even though it was irrefutable. I finally went to D.C., not to D.C., I went to Hollywood to speak to some of my other clients or friends, and they finally came to our aid and did a story on Fox TV nationally. You know, literally documented my work on this family's situation. They played it, and within a couple of days, the judge, being embarrassed, you know, to the fact that now the public knew the truth, she called the family in and literally had the foster family put the baby back in the arms of the mother. So at that point, I realized there was a big problem with bureaucracy. And even my own profession had gone south, because between medicine and child protective services, there's a wonderful racket taking babies out of families' homes, fostering or adopting out that child or trafficking it, and everybody wins except the family. Anyway, so that case, I think it's still hot from the website, gassingamerica.com. it's linked at the end of a that link bar at the top. It should be called Family versus State. And you'll see that story that took me out of my peaceful retirement and drug me back into, medicine on the right side. And then out of that, okay, go ahead, Mitch.
Oh, yeah. Tom, do you think this, we have so many environmental, household environmental issues. You know, people often think, oh, God, the oil spill, the pipeline blowing up, or, the chemical factory catching fire. And, they think about all of those things outside their houses that are displaced from them, and can, if they're in the fallout zone, they can really affect them. But people don't realize inside their houses, it is a fallout zone every day. And I don't think people realize that because they assume that the building materials they're buying and putting in their houses are safe. They're assuming that the paper bags that we used to use all the time, and I request them here and there to get them, but they off-gas so many noxious fumes. When we run our vacuum cleaners, we're running our vacuum, our filtering our air essentially through the entire vacuum and everything in its contents. I mean, I don't think people realize how toxic our environments are to us. I really don't think people have that concept because of they think so big, they miss the million little things that make them sick, if that makes any sense.
Right. We keep looking up at the sky to the 30,000 feet level, right?
Yes.
When we don't realize in this case, where in 2008, another family contacted me. That is the base story of Gassing America. The family contacted me totally unaware of the problem, but trying to figure out why their baby was near death. This is another case. And ultimately, I found out that their mobile home or manufactured home was designed with a what's called a breathing air, blend air, that's the actual trade name, blend air, intake mounted only 3 feet away from the exhaust pipe of their furnace up on the roof, where nobody ever thinks to look. What's really interesting in all of this stuff is that now exposed the fact that close to 34 million individuals are living at risk of the same thing that this family in this little community, the community, of course, is Manti, Utah, where this family lived in a mobile home. But we have 17 or more million units out there in the United States that people are suffering in, and they don't even know that they are being subjected to this subtle or insidious poisoning event. What's really sad is to find out that the carbon monoxide alarms that are sold commercially, they are set to go off at 200 to 400 parts per million. Yet if OSHA came into that space and measured only 50 parts per million, they would throw you out of the building and yellow band it. You know what I mean by yellow banding, putting a police barrier until the item had been repaired. Yet people are living in these excessively toxic spaces, completely unaware. Now, formaldehyde has a obvious smell, but carbon monoxide does not. So, by the way, when you're breathing even formaldehyde, after a while, your nose will kind of what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, you would air out, you know, by the time the call would go in, people were sick and the building was evacuated, the floors, you know, they essentially aired everything out, and the, you know, the carbon monoxide dissipated by that time. And
right. The word I was looking for is recalibrate. Your nose calibrates or
okay.
adjust to what you're smelling. So after a while, you're not even aware that you're breathing a noxious gas.
Yes.
Because if you're in it long enough, it's kind of like your own BO, right? Shouldn't say.
Yes. Or how about somebody that lives in a house and they have animals inside the house? And
right,
you know,
after a while they don't even notice the smell of urine.
Notice the odor, and they may pee or poo or smell, or if they have rabbits in a cage or something along those lines. Our nose gets acclimated to that stuff.
Acclimated, that's the term I'm looking for too.
Recalibrates,
acclimates.
Yeah.
Reboot.
We get so used to our environments that our bodies adjust. And that's, you know, that's not a good thing in some cases.
Right.
But, you know, I know there were many problems. I remember the FEMA trailers that they brought in that had the Chinese drywall in them. And I guess they had high levels of formaldehyde, and there was other stuff off gassing off of these things that they put in these little trailers, and was essentially making people sick. I remember when I had worked, I had spent 18 months working in a nuclear power plant as a laborer, and I had asbestos removal license, and I did asbestos removal, and I did some hazmat stuff, and you had to really kind of be amazed at the way the companies got around the regulations. You know, when you were removing, doing asbestos work in a factory, if they did more than 143 linear feet or somewhere in there of piping, they got booted up to a new level, which required a massive inspection for asbestos. And, you know, I had done some work in the Hershey chocolate factory in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And I was using glove bagging asbestos on like a 12-inch pipe directly above a 10,000-gallon vat of chocolate while it mixed, you know. And, you know, I'm on this gang rail up there, and, you know, I'm glove bagging this stuff, and I'm looking all around, and I'm just thinking to myself, I mean, this is crazy. And, you know, when you went up around in from the factory through the one warehouse back up to the powdered milk floor, I guess they got most of their milk in was powdered form. And when they reconstituted, they had these big tanks. And these tanks, they had been repaired and fixed so many times that the asbestos on the inside of the fiberglass coverings, really, that was holding it all together, it was like powder. And you couldn't even really do any, you couldn't even hardly vacuum it out of there. I mean, it was amazing, you know, what companies did and what they could get away with. You know, we did asbestos in a school one time. And we actually had to take a sledgehammer to knock it out from the ceiling It was in a carport over a place where buses pulled in, and it had 1% asbestos in concrete mixture. And they made us, you know, we had hell to get that stuff out of there. That just, they went to so many extremes on doing all this different stuff within the industries. And don't forget, you know, you're talking about the camper, mobile home, and RV industries. They have so many subcontractors, most of them don't know what the other one is doing. And that's probably just another piece of the design flaws, the way they end up getting built in to stuff today. But yeah, it's really amazing what we see today in the industrial and commercial settings. Do you think lumber prices will come back down?
I doubt it.
Oh my gosh. I was like, I could not believe it when I was in Lowe's a few weeks ago, and I just looked and just said, nope, okay. I won't build it. The hell with it. You know, I'll make it out of concrete blocks or something if I have to. They expect the prices to come down, but I don't think they will.
I don't see how they can.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that it would change? Let me change a gear and change a topic. COVID is such a farce. I know I had the flu. I had the COVID flu, and it did. It kicked my ass. So it took me about 8 months for me to recover to where I wasn't getting monthly, couple-week chest inflammations and infections. So the long-haul COVID, I guess is what they call it, is just like another normal flu. But it's engineered. Can we expect anything different from this because it's engineered? I guess there's some of the other questions I got that I had. One of them in particular was when we first was hearing about the COVID genome and that how it had been enhanced at the University of North Carolina. I think the Raleigh-Durham campus where they were adding the spike protein. And then there was a paper that said it had been enhanced in Australia using an HIV component that was added into the alleged the genome. I know this is kind of long drawn out, but when the Indian researchers came out and said that they found this genome, the way it's put together, to be engineered. And that's when Fauci and Daszak and EcoHealth, all they attacked that paper, made them with, and it was withdrawn. But we know today it's more than likely absolutely true. I don't know a whole lot about virology. And I guess my question is that piece of the HIV genome that is supposedly in the COVID SARS virus, is that a natural happenstance in many different viruses in nature, or is that kind of a real off fluke, or a rare rarity?
Well, I got to tell you, most of what you hear is the bloviate of scientists who want to have you look at them with awe in their intelligence.
Yeah.
The other problem is, too, it's fear porn. Because when you're told all this stuff about being some fantastic biological engineering, what does that do to you? It creates fear because you think, well, I don't have any control. It takes control out of your hands and puts it in theirs. Mm-hmm. But the reality, God and nature have had millions of years to try every experiment with these pathogens. And after, let's say we've been here on the earth, let's just say 1 million years. How come we didn't go through this before? How is it that all of a sudden we now have this robo monster, kind of like a robot, you know, or kind of like a artificial intelligence? How is it that just now man has figured out how to do this? Or how about nature? See, my problem is I listen to this stuff and I'm in awe. In fact, I am in awe of their ability to machinate or to manufacture a thought rather than a fact. See, here's a reality. Throughout all time, pathogens require certain environments. And the most important factor that determines whether a pathogen can exist or not, it has to have an envelope of fat. It has to have a food supply, primarily flesh. It has to also be able to be mobile so it can get somewhere to get new food, or it also has to be able to get out of its own fecal material. If I put you in a closet, lock you in that closet with a bucket, right? And I cut a hole in the door like in solitary confinement, and I slip you a plate of food into that closet. But I never allow you to empty the bucket. After a while, are you going to be healthy or alive?
I'm going to be knee deep in my own dew. I'm going to drown. I'm going to die in my own crap, my own feces, in my own everything. I mean, isn't that what would happen?
Exactly. I mean,
certainly, you can keep feeding it in, but you know, you create a toxic environment. I've often talked about this, but maybe in the terms of like, you know, bisphenol A and all of the hormone simulators and endocrine disruptors, you know, that we get exposed to. And, you know, I keep thinking to myself, well, you know, one or two, maybe, you know, wouldn't be so bad, but you know, it's 50, 60, 100, 200, you know, different chemical compounds that are all, you know, interacting, you know, with our natural mechanisms. And, you know, our natural mechanisms don't understand that it's a simulated hormone, that it's not a real hormone. And, you know, that changes who we are, because then our body, you know, I've often talked about this as far as the way part of the explanation of the sexualization or the de-sexing of society is, you know, all the unnatural estrogen and hormone simulators, our bodies, and particularly women's bodies, saying, oh, God, look, we got enough hormone and we got enough estrogen. It's just fake. It doesn't really work in the rest of the system. But the body registers it as the hormone. And so then you have no estrogen, but you have more testosterone, the higher levels in a ratio. And then in a man, you know, you just, you know, you have estrogen accumulation. Because of all the simulators, it's Orwellian, I guess you could say. But nobody seems to think that that's a problem too. And I think that's a bigger problem as all these other, thousand ways we poison and kill ourselves in modern day society.
Well, the reality with the sexual hormones or the androgens, there's only two glands in the universe that can produce those. Two tissues in the whole universe. Testosterone produced by testicles or gonads, right? What about estrogen? the only organ or gland that can produce estrogen is an ovary. Now, you're not going to hear that from most everybody else because they've been drugged down the line, and I hate to do this, but there's a certain individual that works for the Preston Weston Price group that tells people that if you eat soybeans, you're going to get estrogen from soybeans. And I challenge them, and I've been on a couple of panels face-to-face with these players. I say, have you ever done an autopsy on a soybean? If you did, you would find out there is no ovary in the soybean. So here's the rule. That soybean cannot produce any estrogen. Now, indeed, the soybean provides the precursors to estrogen, but so does all food. So how does a woman end up with an overload or an excess of estrogen? Or how does a man end up with even a quantity of estrogen? Because his testicles cannot produce it. So where does he get estrogen? Are you sitting down?
Yes.
Where are you going to get estrogen?
Oh, gosh.
From a female. And that's it. Not from a soybean. Not from any other source. Only from a female. How about testosterone? The only way you can obtain testosterone, not from any other item except a male. Because the only thing that can produce testosterone in the whole universe is the testicle. So how do we end up with these hormones in our system that are not germane to us? How do you do that? You have to eat something that's female. You have to inject something that's female. By the way, this is a little sidebar for the vaccines. Mm-hmm. How are vaccines produced? They utilize the blood and offal from the slaughterhouse and any other source of flesh. By the way, even some of it coming from abortion clinics. So in the human family and in the animal family, there are only, believe it or not, even though there's the gay pride stuff going on, there's only two sexes, right? Am I okay with that? Have I been missing something? Is there maybe a dozen different sexes? Having worked in delivery and OBGYN, you know, in pediatrics, I've only seen two different body types. You know, on occasion there are some disfigurements or mutations, but they are extremely rare. But in the end, even at that, there's only one of two choices in terms of sex. The same thing is there's only one of two choices when it comes to the acquisition of testosterone or estrogen. You have to bring into your body the tissues that generated those hormones. So you look at the human family today, you have so many young boys that are coming out with confusion, right? Or developing confusion. There is a biological factor in that situation as well. And of course, I did a lecture in Santa Monica, California, and Ellen DeGeneres and Annie Hesch were present. And they were a little bit surprised when they found out that God did not determine whether they were gay or lesbian, but man. When I explained to them that when they were being gestated in their mothers, their mother was bringing in testosterone from an outside source, and they were being impacted by that testosterone in utero while they're developing. And then, of course, after they were taken out of the womb and taken off of the breast milk of the mother, well, even while they were on the breast milk, that could influence them. If the mother was bringing into her body tissues that included testosterone. Now, bouncing over to the male fetus, the mother's estrogen, her body produces estrogen because she's a woman, but her placenta blocks that estrogen from getting to the fetus. However, if she's bringing in estrogen from another individual, her body will not block it at the placenta, because the placenta simply looks at it and said, is this mother or not mother? If it's mother's hormones, it will block them. It will not allow them to get through. But if the hormone is from another individual, carries another name tag, so to speak, it will consider that estrogen as a nutrient for the baby. So the baby, if it's a male or even a female, will be getting estrogen from another individual, not from the mother, but from whatever estrogen source that mother has brought in. As I explained that whole mechanism, Ellen DeGeneres and, like I say, Annie came up and they were talking to me specifically about the issue with lesbianism. And I said, well, yeah, the same rules apply. If your mother's bringing in the hormone from another individual or another creature, more appropriately, that hormone is getting through and impacting your development. And then if she continues to feed you the same way she was fed, that will continue to apply its effect upon you even after you're born. What was really interesting was Ellen's answer. She said, oh, I never did believe that God was so cruel as to where he would force a female or a male spirit into a female body. Kind of a shocker of a reaction, right?
Yeah.
But the fact is...
denial? Go ahead.
But the fact is, I was actually shooting down this theory that they have that somehow God intended for them to be gay or lesbian.
Yes.
And I said, no, it's man's problem, where man has decided to violate simple Genesis wisdom and take into their body the hormones of another sex. Now, that makes a lot of people uncomfortable. In fact, I don't know if Mar took a hit last night because she touched on that last night. Anyway, most of what I tell people is extremely uncomfortable because when you know the truth and it flies in the face of your tradition or your habits or behavior, yeah, it's really hard to accept. But in fact, it is so rational, so logical, when you realize a man's body does not produce estrogen. So how does he end up with estrogen? He's consuming it. And the greatest source of estrogen, and I know I'm going to make people mad, may lose some of your audience, Mitch. I'll have to send you a check to make up for
the chicken and
difference.
Hamburgers. I'll say it. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you're getting close. In fact, you're right. But the real slammer for estrogen, the real slammer for an overdose of the female hormone, is that food that is produced from the concentrated form of a female produced food. What's the favorite food of America today?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Eggs? I'm pizza. Myself in pizza? Oh, gosh. I'm in trouble. I make my own pizza, though.
See, Brew, I can make a lot of people angry. But the fact is, all you got to do is think. Please, people, start thinking. The cow is a female. She has to have lots of estrogen to produce milk. And her mammary is not as sophisticated as the human mother. So whatever's in her blood plasma, i.e. her estrogen, ends up in her milk. And then you take 10 to 70 pounds of that milk and convert it into 1 pound of cheese. What's happening to the estrogen? It's concentrating. And when you eat that cheese, you're getting a slammer of estrogen. Yet the Sally Fallon and the Preston Weston Price Foundation, they'll say, oh, you got this estrogen from the soybean. What is she really promoting? Who is she paid by? The livestock industry. Okay. So she's protecting that industry when in fact it is that industry that creates the abundance of estrogen that men and women are consuming. And as a consequence, as that estrogen is finding its way past the liver. See, there's one thing that protects you from that erroneous infusion. I'll use the big words. It's your liver. But if your liver has some insult that's done damage to it, and it's not able to break that estrogen down, it ends up in your bloodstream. And like in Ellen DeGeneres' case or others' cases, that hormone from the wrong sex ends up making its way into the placenta and thereby into the baby's bloodstream. Well, what's the indicator that estrogen is doing its damage to men? Well, what does estrogen manage or control in the female body? Breast tissue and her uterus. Does man have breast tissue? Yes, he does. Does a man have a uterus? Well, metaphorically, yes, he does. What do we call the uterus of a man? Mitch? Hello?
Your prostate.
Yep. And if your liver is failing to break down that estrogen that's in that cheese or dairy, or any female meat or flesh, that estrogen is getting through and impacting the behavior of your prostate. And your prostate, unlike the uterus, does not have the convenient capability of getting rid of extra tissue like the uterus does with a woman. So what happens with your prostate, you keep on slamming it with estrogen. Estrogen encourages growth of tissue in the prostate, but the prostate can't go through a period and shed the lining, right? So it just builds up and builds up and builds up. And after a while, you can't urinate. And if you're unfortunate, ultimately you develop prostate cancer. So what's the answer for men in terms of prostate health? Soybeans? No problem. Cheese? Problem. Now, again, people say, well, I've been eating cheese for my life. And by the way, I did. Mitch, I used to be a dairyman rancher as well as working in pathology. So of all people that should have been wiser, should have been myself, but I had to readjust my attitude when I turned 50 because I was at death's door with cancer, terminal cancer. And I said, well, you're an idiot, Tom. You know what causes the problem with your immune system and with this cancer. Change your habits. And so 30 years ago, I stopped consuming my own product. By the way, do you think my family and their industry are happy with me?
Not at all, Tom. Not at all.
Not at all. And most people are not very happy because they love their cheese. And I'll tell you quite frankly, cheese is delicious, isn't it?
I love it myself. Give me some good Colby Jack with a little bit of salt, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Good stuff. But I hear my body cringe every time I take a bite of it, though. I admit it.
It's your feminine nature.
Thanks.
Anyway, no, you know, truth is really tough. You know, people say, well, know the truth and the truth will make you free. I say, well, yeah, yeah, that is true. But on the other hand, learning the truth may make you unhappy or angry. And it does force you to change behavior.
Yeah.
And of course, right now with the situation, with the economics and with the alleged plan or scam, I almost slipped.
Plandemic. Yeah. Scamdemic. You can say that here. We don't mind. We understand that, you know, it is a severe flu. And it was an unknown quantity when it was first accidentally got out of the lab.
You think it was an accident?
Well, I think my synopsis is that when some of the researchers got sick, there was three of them plus the Bat Lady herself had admitted prior that she had gotten bit by a bat and got sick. But I don't think it was this particular strain that caused all this. But what I think happened is they got their souped up version of COVID that the researchers caught. They went to the hospital and they were in the hospital when their fever broke. They said, oh, we're in the clear. They're not infectious anymore. However, that wasn't the case with this type of flu. And what happened is it just spread then through its the natural contamination of poor health and hygiene services in hospitals in China. I think that's how it originally got out. And then just, it, you know, you never know where it goes from there. But China didn't have it was unknown quantity to them, or unknown. They knew they lost it, but they didn't know what it would do. That's why they locked down all their people and used it to really to spread it around the world. Then I think they had a plan afterwards that, oh, yeah, we can just say this escaped and it will hamper everybody in the world. And it really did. It was the kind of the key for the great reset that all these socialists wanted to put in to control societies and control people. You know, it's really been a clear indication of where certain governments want to go and how they want to treat people as subjects, you know, and not as free citizens. Canada is one shining example of the road to hell paved with good intentions, I guess. But yeah, we have to walk. Go ahead. No.
As you say, I have to walk a little delicately here.
Okay.
I'm hoping you're willing to entertain fact rather than the fiction which we have all been fed from the top to the bottom.
Well, yes.
The reality is,
I agree. The reality is we have all been caught in a psyop, a propaganda psyop, and some of it is true, some of it is totally false. There's gray areas in between. But government is using it to create behaviors that they want the citizens to have. I guess is the way I look at it. But you're absolutely right. They have taken advantage of it, is a good description.
They didn't take advantage of it. They did not take advantage of it. They planned it, the entire event. We've been operating biological laboratories, warfare laboratories included, for now close to 200 years. There's hardly anything in nature that we don't understand. And we understand it so well, we can actually manage it. For example, there was an outbreak of the hantavirus in the Four Corners area between Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado. And because the Native Americans knew me and trusted me, they asked me to come down in 93, it was, when the hantavirus, you know I'm 80 and I can use that as an excuse for sometimes struggling with my words.
That's okay.
But I was asked to go down to Cortez, Shiprock, that area, Tiwok, with the situations of the Navajos, Utes, Zunis, and Hopis dealing with the hantavirus outbreak. And I gathered the Native American brothers and sisters together. I said, now I'm going to educate you on the facts. You'll have to keep it to yourselves, because if it gets out, there'll be all kinds of retribution or reprisal. And of course, everyone will tell you you're crazy and you're a liar. So anyway, the CDC had brought their mobile laboratory, you know, like a semi-trailer, and several of the technicians and their pickup trucks and all their equipment needed to go out and take samples of these, quote, kangaroo rats that allegedly was the source of the hantavirus among the Native Americans. And of course, what the Native Americans were told, as well as other people all through the West, when the hantavirus was raising its head, they said, you're being infected by the dust and the droppings from these rodents. Uh-huh. Well, sure. So how come man has survived millions of years? Because rats have been crapping on the ground all that time, right? Birds fly through the air. They defecate in the air. How come man isn't extinct? Anyway, so I sat these Indians down together and I said, now I want you to observe the behavior of these CDC technicians, and now you're going to learn the truth. So, of course, the CDC technicians would come out with their live traps, place their live traps under the trailers of these Native Americans or wherever they were living. And after a few days, there would be a captured rodent. And then they'd come back and retrieve the trap, put it in their pickup truck, and drive it back to the big trailer, which was a lab, a portable lab. So now the Native Americans came back, and I said, okay, tell me what you saw while these young men were out setting these traps, and then when they came back to retrieve them. I said, they've been telling you that this disease, this, quote, hantavirus, has been infecting your families because you're breathing the dust and the droppings from these rodents. Yet, tell me how these young men are dressed or outfitted when they go back to retrieve these traps. And they said, well, they're wearing knee pads, gloves, Levi's t-shirts. I said, are they wearing a mask? Are they wearing a respirator? Are they wearing a spacesuit? And they said, no. I said, well, wait a minute. If they're crawling underneath your trailer and picking up that trap, oh, and there's a little bit of wind.
Oh, yeah, they're sucking in all that same stuff they said was killing everybody else.
Exactly. So I said, what is the real fact? Is it the dust and the droppings of the rodent that's infecting you? Now, indeed, in the laboratory, we know precisely that this pathogen is in the blood and tissues of the rodent. And, of course, when the rodent poops, for a very short period, the pathogen may be there. But it's like you in the closet with your bucket of poop. Your own feces is toxic to the pathogen. Well, the feces of the rodent is toxic to the pathogen. By the way, by the way, when he's fully, when the pathogen is fully enveloped in feces, how much food is there? The food is already consumed. So there's no food, and you're living in your own shit, excuse my term. You don't have a very good life. And you're not about to make babies and produce more. So I said, quite frankly, in the feces and the dust that as a consequence of that dried feces, those pathogens are either near dead or dead. And when you're near dead, you're not going to have sex and make babies, are you? As a metaphor.
Trying to live. Hey, we got about a minute to the break, Tom. We're going to take some callers in the next hour. They can ask some questions. We can keep talking until they call. That'd be just great. Everybody give us a call at 540-352-4452 to talk with me or Tom about, about anything. I don't care. But Tom is getting right on the over the target.
We'll talk crap, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I laugh because, you know, I cleaned out foreclosed houses, and I mean, I've been in every kind of environment you could think of.
You're not dead. Oh my gosh.
I cleaned out refrigerators that were so laden with rotten pork meat, you could feel the gas burning on your face. It was people puking 20 feet away, but we still got it done. We still lived. We got a break coming right now, so we'll be back in a few minutes. Everybody, and give us a call if you want to ask any questions. If not, we'll get Tom right back on it.
Unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, howdy. Good evening, everybody. Welcome back. It's high noon at 6 o'clock. Oh, I'm sorry. Must be high noon in Hawaii or something. Hey, Chicago Brood said he's still at work. It's all good. Hey, Tom, what's so... Yeah, it's amazing how we lived all these years and had all this stuff and we're still alive. We didn't die. Just because we cleaned out the shed and there was a bunch of rat turds in the bottom of it or something along those lines. But we certainly do shovel a lot of misinformation today. What do you think some of the biggest misinformation is that's going on today that people need to wake up and understand that it's really detrimental to their health if they believe the official, mis and disinformation? I mean, believe me, I spent 20 minutes on a telephone call I made to the VA hospital in Salem, Virginia, where, I'm a veteran. I get treated there. And I asked them, do you got a COVID committee? I'd like to come up and talk to them. I think it went downhill from there. But no, of course, no response from them. But, every time I go there, I keep telling them, look, you're the one with mass mental illness wearing these masks and the social distancing and all these other things. It's hype. It's not real science. And they just look at me like I'm crazy. And I've worn respirators on the job, for thousands of hours, all different kinds. I even did one little job in a bubble suit. Sad enough to say, but what is
it? Yeah, those are.
Go ahead. What is it that people really need to know?
Well, those suits are appropriate when the conditions demand it.
Yeah.
For example, if you're stripping out sulfur accumulation or condensate out of a cracking tower, petroleum, production.
Right.
Like I did, part of my education was bought and paid for by Utah Oil Company, a refinery over here in Utah. So I'd wear a spacesuit with a hose blowing air into my spacesuit while I go in and chisel, condensate sulfur inside this retort that was cooking petroleum to turn it into gasoline and all the other refinery products. But also when I would be working in the laboratory, when we were doing dissections. For example, I'll go back to the story of the Hunter virus. When these Native Americans came back and they reported to me that the only protection that these technicians were wearing was gloves and knee pads. So I said, well, why gloves or knee pads? What's the worry there? Well, the rocks are sharp, right? When you're crawling underneath a trailer, the stones underneath that trailer can be really annoying. So you put on gloves so you don't scratch your hands or your knees. But they didn't have a respirator on. In fact, they were just in T-shirts and either Levi's or shorts because it's hot down there.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, now once they retrieve that that cage that has that rodent in it and the poop is in there with the rodent, how do they handle it? Well, they kind of drag it out from underneath the trailer, like you do. And then they pick it up by the handle, lean it against their belly, and walk towards their pickup truck with this cage in front of them. Well, when you're walking forward, what's the air motion? It's going to come against that cage and actually waft up your torso, and the breeze from that cage is going to hit you in the mouth or in the face.
Yeah.
I said, oh, okay. What'd they do then? They walked with that cage in front of them, breathing the dust, by the way, if there happened to be any. Then they'd put it over the edge of the pickup truck, drop it in the back of that pickup, then drive the truck over to the lab, then go back and pull that cage back out of the pickup truck, put it on walk it over to the trailer and put it on a slide, a tray, and push it through a door like a pet door into the trailer. Then they'd walk around to the actual entrance to that laboratory. There was two sections, their outer section and the lab. When they're in the outer section, they would put on a spacesuit, go inside the lab. And why would they wear the spacesuit inside the lab? Because what they're going to do is now they're going to cut open that rodent. And what's going to happen? Blood splatter. So you don't want to get the blood splatter where? In your mouth, in your nose, in your eyes.
Any open sore, anything open.
That's low risk, quite frankly, but the important thing for a mask is to keep the blood or splatter or pus from splattering into the technician's face, and particularly the mouth and eyes, and maybe even the nose. So the mask has a purpose, but it's not for what they've been telling you on the radio or the TV today. And you know that, right?
Yeah.
So
do you think... you think it's probably a pretty scientific probability, a fact, that those poor rodents actually had to scat scared out of them as they were picked up by the cage and walked in front. I mean, if I was a rat or a rodent of some kind, I'd be shitting the whole way through there.
As soon as that trap door caught you inside that cage, you'd be panicking. Bouncing around inside that cage trying to find the way out, and you would defecate and be there for a day or two before you were retrieved anyway. So then as I got this report from my Navajo brothers, the tribal individuals, I said, okay, the reason we wear the suit in the laboratory is because we don't want to get infected with the blood or tissues from that animal. Not the scat, not the dust from that dried scat, or even the dander of their body. But we're worried about the true fomite of disease. Now, I'm going to define the word fomite. Do you understand what that is, Mitch?
No. You know what the term... Explain it, and I'll get it. Somebody was saying something in the chat room, so I missed right what you said. So go ahead.
Fomite is the truck, the vector, the vehicle in which a disease organism has to be transmitted or even perpetuated.
Okay.
Perpetuated and promulgated.
It's got to hitch a ride somewhere, yeah.
It's got to be in a Winnebago or in the old little Volkswagen bus that has a built-in sink and toilet and bed, right?
Okay.
That protects you from the environment. Well, the enemy of every pathogen, and I mean it, every frickin' pathogen in the universe that affects or attacks the human being or any member of the animal kingdom, it has to be protected in a layer of fat. It has to be protected or provided food, and it also has to be able to get away from its own excrement. Okay, but what is the true enemy of these pathogens? Number one, oxygen. Now, where is oxygen?
That's in the ocean.
Mitch, where's oxygen?
Well, it's in the atmosphere.
Everywhere.
It's in the air. It's, you know, it's hydrogen peroxide, I guess, has some. You know, we got it everywhere. And, you know, sunlight. Is also this other, you know, this disinfectant.
Oxygen, sunlight, cosmic energy, including microwave. Uh-oh.
Microwave.
What is he saying? Even microwave energy is hazardous to pathogens? Yes, it is, because what is sunlight?
It's a wave. It's an energy wave. We just see it.
Exactly. Thank you. I'm glad I'm talking
colors.
To you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's in the visible spectrum, but it's still microwave energy. All of these energies are pathogenic to the pathogens. So a pathogen can only be perpetuated or preserved within an envelope of a high molecular weight fat, a supply of flesh, protein, lipoproteins, animal in nature, and it must be able to escape its own waste material. Has to be somewhat mobile within the package. So here's the reality. No disease organism can get to you unless it's within the fomite, a fomite. Now, this is hard for people to accept or digest. Oh, I used the word digest. But the only way you can get a disease is to have it infused within a protective package. Fat, flesh, body fluid, i.e. blood or plasma. That's the reality. So how are you going to spread a disease worldwide at the same time? Let's go back to the hantavirus. Now, since the hantavirus had taken the lives of nearly a dozen Native Americans and a couple of actually medical technicians down there at the Native American Indian Health Services, how did the infection of that rodent end up in the bodies of these victims? Now, that was the challenge I gave to the group of Native Americans gathered with me. Okay, you know it's not in the scat. It's not in the dust or the droppings, effectively. And it's not in the dander. Because once a pathogen is outside that animal's body, it's now exposed to oxygen, sunlight, or at least solar energy, and cosmic particles, cosmic energy. So I said, how does that pathogen get from that rodent into you? And they kept thinking, scratching their head. I said, okay, come on. That pathogen requires an envelope, a fomite of animal tissue, quite frankly. And it has to be protected within that animal tissue and then into you. So I said, now think of anything that would consume the rodent, and then you consume it. And they tried, they said, well, a snake will go after a rodent, and sometimes we'll eat snake, but that's not, you know, that's not a high rate of
exposure. Yeah, for people, mass exposure.
Yeah, they don't eat that many snakes, but I said, yeah. Okay. And then they said, well, they don't like cats. Cats are not that popular on the reservations. But they do love their dogs. And they said, oh, sometimes our dogs will eat the rodent or maul it and kill it, right? So the dog can end up with the virus, but it doesn't bother the dog. Anyway, I says, okay, how many times do you eat your dogs? And they said, oh, that's even an offensive thought. I said, so what's the animal that eats the rodent and maybe eats the snake and you eat it? Do you have any idea, Mitch?
Well, I imagine the hogs. If they have hogs, hogs would.
Hogs are not very popular on the reservation.
Okay. Well, you know, I would think chickens might, but.
There you go.
You know,
why would the Native Americans keep really, chickens, by the way?
Chickens? Well, I know they're really not good to keep bugs and other things down, but I've really never thought of them as, you know, keeping mice and rodents and, you know,
and snakes
or snakes away. I really
you
never
put a snake
about.
In a box with a chicken. Guess who comes out?
It's not
snake
the
comes
snake.
Out. Yeah, he comes out in the belly of the chicken.
Yes, well, I have to confess, there was my mother, she, God rest her soul, she's been dead about 5.5, 6 years now. And she called me one morning, Mitchell, you got to get over here. I said, what's the matter? She says she had a red-tailed hawk come down and fly down and then go into her chicken house after her chickens. And I guess she broke its wing and beat it half to death. And I kind of finished the job.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I was laughing, you know, because we really never had.
I can see the reason I was laughing is I can see this lady beating up on this poor bird.
Yeah, with her broom. Yeah, and this, you know, it's probably about a 6 foot wide, you know, about 8 foot long shed, you know, and she's in there in that short area trying to hit it, I guess, hit it with it. And it's a protected species, too. So, you know, it's not something that you're supposed to kill here in Virginia or, you know, around the East Coast. But, yeah, it's just, you know, life is strange because we often don't think about, you know, what our poultry, what our food is eating, you know, just like mad cow when, you know, they were essentially feeding cows to cows and ended up with the rogue prion with a spongivine, a spongiform encephalitis, I believe.
Yeah, see. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And
by the way, Mitch.
Go ahead.
I was the one that Howard Lyman spent several weeks with me being prepared to go on Oprah Winfrey's show and expose that problem on Oprah's show. And then I had to help her get back out of the lawsuit in Texas. So
wow.
I have a history that's kind of unique relative to mad cow. But anyway, what happened to that hawk?
He got buried in the ground somewhere.
Now, what I was anticipating you were going to say, once your mother disabled, Is your mother your aunt?
It was my mother, yeah. It was my mom.
When she disabled that hawk, I'm not surprised that you didn't say the hawk then became the target of the chickens, and the chickens killed the hawk and ate it. They would if she'd left that injured hawk in the chicken coop.
Yeah.
The chickens would have devoured it.
I believe that, yeah.
See, as a former rancher dairyman myself, my children would call up the neighbor kids when I was going to go with the back loader into the chicken coop and clean the floor. And I'd back in there with, you know, shovel and broad, you know, square-headed shovel and the back loader. And I'd clean the floor, and then I'd get over into the corner where I had the pallets sitting, and on top of the pallets I had the laying mash, the food for the chickens. And I'd, you know, get into that corner. Well, by that time, the neighbor kids were all peering through the wire into the chicken coop, right? Their fingers through the chicken wire, and they're all standing there waiting for the excitement. The little girls and little boys of the neighborhood, they're all there with my kids. And as I roll those barrels off the pallet, and then I pick up the pallet, what's on the floor underneath those pallets? Nests of mice. Now, when I was in there with the back loader and doing the manual shoveling, the chickens would all get up in their roosts, right, or in their boxes.
Yeah.
And they would avoid me. But as soon as I rolled those barrels off and picked up those pallets, and now the nests of mice were exposed, those chickens came off of their perches, the boxes, in a ravage. And within seconds, there was not a feather of not even a hair of a mouse left. And the little girls from the neighborhood, they'd be passed out outside. The guys would be saying, "Ooh, awesome." You know, they'd be so impressed with that carnage when my chickens would just literally devour these baby mice and their siblings as I'd exposed them when I rolled the barrels and the pallets, moved the pallets. So what are chickens? They're obligate carnivores. So when I finally got the Native Americans to realize that the chickens that they used to keep their properties free of snakes and rodents was the final fomite or vector into them.
Yeah.
They were a little bit disturbed because they loved their chicken. But I said, quite frankly, when you're cutting the throat of that chicken and butchering it, and if any of that blood, raw blood and tissue gets into your mouth or into your face, that's when you contract the Hunter virus or the pathogen that is labeled or, how to say, rebranded as a virus. And I got to play that fact in there, because the virus is simply the evidence of a disease, not the disease.
Absolutely.
It's like the glass on the freeway after the accident. That did not cause the accident, but is simply evidence of an accident. What is a virus? It's simply a piece of DNA or RNA that was shredded when something else, demolished your DNA. And that something else has to be something with mass and energy. A virus does not have either mass or energy. That's a whole discussion.
Oh, I'm sure. Here, hold on one second, Tom. Let me play this. I think I got this queued up here. Chicago Brew, I'm not even sure what it says. It's by Rudy Giuliani. They were talking about the... I guess partly about the Moderna virus. Here, let me play it. You should be able to hear it pretty easily.
Communist Party. Again, there's different sides of gain of function.
Here we
right?
go.
Some people say it's to progress what may happen in nature so we can get ahead of it and develop a vaccine. some people say, I want to do this because if war happens or I want to, I can use it as a bioweapon. So there's two sides. Plus, we know out of two decades of doing gain of function in this country or collaborating with labs around the world, that it has not yielded anything of any noteworthy.
That was the answer that Obama had.
Yes.
Obama's
it was
answer.
Too risky.
Okay, so basically, Rudy Giuliani was talking with a woman, and they're basically saying that, you know, they tried this, and they really, there wasn't any benefit, but there was so much risk to it. What's the best way to, is there a best way to explain to the common Joe, you know, in layman's terms of what they were doing to these bat viruses at the Wuhan lab?
Studying them, collecting them, culturing them, growing them, and then distributing them.
When you say distributing them, do you mean shipping them to other research facilities or releasing them?
Or to wherever they want them to be.
To wherever they want to.
A contagion.
Shut down the Hong Kong independence movement pretty quick, doesn't it? after the...
We've been studying pathogens for a couple of hundred years. Going back, let's go back to the Panama Canal.
Okay.
France went in and tried to build a canal. What was their problem?
Malaria. Then
malaria.
They got sick, yeah.
So then we said, we were rather self-assured, cocky, let's us go down and do it. Initially, we were having a problem with malaria. But then we got a little bit smarter. We said, well, we need to figure out malaria. How many people have seen the movie Medicine Man with Sean Connery? It's kind of a documentary. The people ought to pay attention to the facts in that documentary. It's actually a novel, or what do you call it, a fiction, but it's based on fact. When we sent the people down there to build the canal, they were becoming infected with malaria. So we had to figure out why and how to remedy it, because people were living in the Panama zone for thousands of years, right?
Yes.
Now, they would suffer with malaria, but they would also treat their malaria. Ah, how did they treat it? So in Medicine Man, in effect, we sent this pathologist, this biologist down there, and he studies all of the fauna and the flora of that area. And the study studied the behavior of the people that survived it. He found out, and this is what we know, it wasn't the mosquitoes. It was the flesh of that area that carried the parasite. And the way to modify that parasite's activity was to drink the tea made from the bark of a tree. What was that tea? Quinine. Uh-huh. So then once we figured that out, number one, the source of the infection was from the birds and the animals of that area. So rather than carelessly preparing them and getting infected, you either prepared them very carefully according to health standards, or you didn't prepare them at all. In fact, you shipped in meat from outside. But on the other hand, if you had an infection of malaria, do exactly as the natives did, and that was to take a tea or an extract from the tree, and I forget the name of the tree, but you can look that up. So we learned long ago that if we're going to either send military or industrial operations into an area, we need to study the disease issues endemic to that area and learn the techniques or tricks of the local populations on how to deal with it. And that is the major effort of biological warfare units, is so that we can send our troops into an area and have them either prepared behaviorally or medically for that area. You know, if you're going to send people down to Argentina, for example, to drill holes in the earth and steal their oil, you want to make sure that your you know, your riggers and your workers are not going to be dying on you because that's an economic loss. So you want to make sure that the disease is in there and how the people of that area treat their own diseases. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
You there, Mitch?
Yeah, I'm right here, Tom. Hey, Chicago Brew, you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, so what we're really talking about is most of the time when we're getting diseases and pathogens, they're actually coming in on meats and basically other types of things that we eat, basically, I guess I should say.
Okay, now let me ask you a question. If we were playing charades and you were chosen as the object, what would be the first, well, there's a question that's always asked in charade. What would be the first answer? Is Mitch animal, vegetable, or mineral? What are you?
Well, gosh, I guess I'm vegetable. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm
kidding. Or you could be a mineral because you're just hard-headed. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and some people say I have lead in my ass, so hell, I don't know. Just don't have enough gold, though. That's the other spectrum part I'm missing, I guess. But, yeah, definitely an animal. You're absolutely right, Tom.
And see, I know I'm an animal because my in-laws tell me that. My wife's family always say he's just an animal.
Anyway. I usually get asshole, but that's okay. I'm
80 on. Years and still no dinner table manners. What's that?
Well, the fact is we are animal. In fact, what's really interesting in all this nonsense, tell me, of all the animals on the planet, which of the animals is the most hygienically antiseptic?
That'd be human, mankind.
We use a bathroom, we take a shower, we wash our hands, we cremate our food or sterilize our food most often, and we also are built correctly. We have no hair to speak of. So we're the naked animal in the planet. And I don't know if you've ever sweat, but I notice when I sweat and it drips down my face and onto my nose and hits my lips, what flavor do I notice in my sweat?
Salt.
Salt. By the way, even if I'm not sweating, my oil glands are producing oils, and those oils include mild acids. Now, is salt good for bacteria?
No.
Are acids good for bacteria?
No.
And the fact is, no. So when a pathogen ends up on your skin, it is not very long before it's done for. And I mean not very long.
Now, what kind of degree do you need to know that part? You need to be a nuclear scientist, a brain surgeon, a PhD, high school education. What to know just what you just said, salt and minerals, oils, what kind of degree do you need to know that that's what we're talking about here doesn't like that?
Do you need a degree to know that?
Well, I mean, they didn't let people go surfing in the ocean or go swimming and stuff like that. So, you know, they weren't allowed to do that because there was this invisible enemy out there. So I'm just saying that, and these are coming from all the, you know, the doctors and scientists and the government, and they're telling people you can't surf, you can't play, you can't work up a sweat, you can't do any of this stuff. You can't go outside even in the summertime. And so what kind of degree? Obviously they knew better.
What's really interesting, common sense tells you the truth. Now, thankfully, I went into both veterinary and human pathology and pediatrics. So, and I did that in at the end of the 50s, into the 60s, and left the system in the 70s because we felt the change that occurred. It went from mercy to mercenary. But quite frankly, that fact that salt is deleterious to pathogens is known by anybody, quite frankly, if you just think about it. In the old days, how did we preserve meat? We dried it and salted it. Sure. Why did we put salt on the meat? That's to kill the pathogens. So salt is deleterious to pathogens. I don't care which one you're talking about that attacks the animals or any animal in the kingdom. Salt is not its friend. And even the mild acids of your oil glands are not its friend. And one other really important barrier of the human frame and all animals is saliva, mucus. In fact, that is the frontline chemical of your immune system. Now, what did your grandmother or mother tell you to do when you ate your food? Chew it thoroughly. To do what? To mix your saliva into that food to begin to denature that food. Which food primarily was she worried about? Meat and cheese, by the way, whether she understood that or not. Because then you're applying the other biological barrier to disease, lysozymes, or digestive enzymes. And I'm going to go back to the story I've told this before. How many of you have had your little baby crawling on the floor, picking up objects and sticking the objects in its mouth? And how many of those babies have ever died? Pretty much none. How about when the family cat comes into the room and the baby wants to love that cat? It grabs that cat and kisses it, mauls it, puts its hands in its mouth after handling the cat. How many babies have ever died from making that affectionate action towards the cat? Now, even worse, the family puppy comes into the room. Now the puppy wants to love the baby. Where does the tongue of that puppy end up?
It licks that little kid to death, probably.
That tongue ends up in the mouth and the nose, the eyes, the ears, every orifice that puppy can find on that baby, that tongue goes into. Where was that tongue just moments before it came into the living room with the baby? Come on, people, think.
Oh, yeah, we know he was cleaning his balls. I'll say it.
And if there's another puppy, with him, he's cleaning his balls.
Or his butt, yeah, or who knows what.
You see how really stupid God is? He makes these dogs love people. Wait a minute, did I say God was stupid? Uh-oh, my error. God is not stupid. He designed that puppy with perfection. He designed you and your baby with perfection. And the only way you can be infected with a disease is when you violate the puppy, when you violate his, kingdom members, and you actually bring that tissue into you directly, like the technician in the laboratory not wearing the mask, or the physician in the surgical theater not wearing the mask. See, in surgery, we wear a mask. Why do we wear a mask? Is it to protect the patient from the surgeon or the surgeon from the patient?
So we don't spittle on them.
What we're worried about in surgery is blood splatter. In fact, in 1963-64, that winter, I and a student of mine suffered a serious case of coronavirus. My student pulled the Petri dish off the shelf in front of us. Instead of grabbing it underneath at the base of this Petri dish, he grabbed it from the slip-on lid. As he pulled the Petri dish off the shelf, the Petri dish container fell free of the lid. It struck the second shelf down, and the blood and gelatin that we used as a medium in that P petri dish splattered into both my and his face. By the way, when you drop something, what is your usual vocal response? Oh, scheiße, right? So what's the form of your mouth and lips when you say that? It's open. So both he and I got blood splatter from that petri dish as we were culturing a pseudomonia Mycoplasma pneumoniae. Ah, there we go. What is Mycoplasma pneumoniae? The flu, the cold, the coronae, the COVID. We've known COVID for hundreds of years, quite frankly. Well, 100 years.
It's been around.
And all you got to do to... What's that?
It's been around since the dawn of time, and you just didn't put a name to it until the last couple of hundred years.
Yeah. We've been dealing with these pathogens forever. In fact, let me tell you the story of, okay, I think you were asking me to reiterate the story of the cowpox, smallpox.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. Mitch didn't finish the clip. See, they were talking about the biohazards and what, you know, why did they even, what they were saying, the risk to the reward. They said, why they even switched the labs. It said, well, it was the risk wasn't, you know, worth the reward to get caught doing it in the United States. So they had to go do it somewhere else, blah, blah, blah. And the lady says, yeah, well, there's all sorts of examples of biowarfare, World War One and Two. And then she even went back to the British. She's like, during the French-American War, the British gave blankets with smoked pox to the Indians. Now, that made me reflect to you saying in one conversation that that whole thing is a fairy tale, that that can't happen. So do you want to elaborate?
They were delivering smallpox to the Indians, but it was not in the blankets.
Okay.
And COVID has been delivered to the world
thing for our whole lives. So is there a more truthful version of the story?
Yes.
Okay.
Again, the rule of eternity in terms of pathogen is it cannot tolerate oxygen, sunlight, or cosmic particles, cosmic energy, microwave included. So how are you going to move smallpox, which initially is called cowpox, coming primarily from the cow? So how are you going to get cowpox into the Native Americans?
Like the
rodent in the Four Corners, you have to find a fomite of fat, flesh, and fluid, primarily blood or plasma or pus. And when I say pus, it's got to be newly created pus, not old pus, because pus is working on the disease organisms that are in it, like the mucus of your mucous membranes. It's degrading the pathogens. So how are you really going to get smallpox into the Native Americans? You bring in something that they're unaccustomed to. You switch out buffalo for beef. Which kind of beef? Infected beef from See, part of my...
How'd they infect it? How'd they infect the beef?
Well, you find beef like I used to do when I was a veterinary pathologist. You go out, you examine livestock, and if you find an animal that's showing a high titer or a high count of pathogen particles, you'll take that animal out of service, quarantine it, or you'll bury it. But if you notice a cow is not doing too well and you want to kill a few Indians off, you make sure you cut that animal up and feed it to the Indians. That's exactly how the smallpox got to the Native Americans. Instead of being able to eat their buffalo, which were wild, and if the animal was ill, it would die of its own accord. The healthier animals were your food. They instead were giving them a food that they were not biologically adjusted to, and that food was infected. just like the rodents passing the infection to the chickens, and then the chickens becoming the food of the Navajo, the Zunis, the Hopis, the Utes in the Four Corners, and even the other tribes and other white people throughout the Southwest when that hunter virus was endemic to the area. So how do you deliver COVID worldwide and have it show up in populations all over the planet? Since the human being is a poor carrier with the salty skin, the acid skin, the active saliva, how are you going to transmit this disease worldwide? You ready for this? Vaccines. Is anybody listening?
Oh, yes.
What does the Book of Revelation tell you? It's in your face. The vials will be the delivery mechanism. But it didn't hit the human beings right away. So how are you going to complete that step in between? You bring the vials to the livestock industry, catch them when they're not aware, and you make sure that your fomite is created right there.
Yeah.
Is anybody still listening?
Make sure that you have your delivery mechanisms down, down range, so to speak, down line, just like an inline marketing type thing. You can spread it through the entire system when you hit each different level.
You know what I would call that? Gain of function.
Gain of function.
Guarantee delivery, guarantee infection, guarantee the contagion is going to be in that area for the people to consume. And if their immune systems are not up to it, they're going to express the disease. Some of them will die, others will survive. But then you can say, oh, because you didn't wear your mask, because you violated your social distancing. Well, can I say it this way? Bull crap. It's because you ate from the same freaking fomite.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, we got about 12 minutes left here. Mitchell, you had a specific question you wanted to ask Tom about the HIV and Fauci and how that all plays into this. Some broader question that you were mentioning earlier. Do you want to ask Tom this now?
We may have crossed some of that earlier. You know, but the truth is, you know, we've done so many different things with so many different viruses. It's essentially just like we've done with all the chemical compounds in the world that we can think of. We've attached them all together and we've seen what crap or what miracle that we can pull off. And,
exactly.
You know, this, we're doing the same thing with any virus that we find. And this is another reason why China wants to have another 20 different Wuhan labs. It's
well,
idiocracy.
Here's another piece of that puzzle. I'm living in a neighborhood of medical professionals, and they're freaked out because they truly are not medical professionals like I was, but they are the brokers of medicine. Where do you think their suppliers are? And they're freaking out now because that supply has been cut off. Do you know what Wuhan, China was? Not just a biological lab, but biological production. So where do you think the vials are being produced?
Well, I know they have a plant in Baltimore. That has been had hundreds of millions of doses that have been contaminated or something that was
they're
wrong.
They're all contaminated.
Production. But I really don't know. I would think that they would have, you know, factories essentially, you know, their own pharmaceutical factories, you know, that AstraZeneca or whoever. But clearly, they just look like they're scientists who put together a contracting firms that contracted to any industrial entity that
cheap labor, cheap,
cheap
resources. And Wuhan was a major production center. I know that from these men around me that are freaked out because they're bankrupt. They're not able to deliver their medications because their medications were created in Wuhan, one of the largest medical production centers in the world, including the vaccines for livestock. And by the way, isn't it kind of curious that a lot of the livestock productions have been shut down? Who's minding the store when the employees have been turned loose? Who's now minding the product?
Well, that
who's
is
minding
true.
Fulmine?
That was another so-called consequence of the shutdown, where they literally slaughtered tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of hogs and chickens and and other animals. Now, whether they say it was just, you know, they didn't have. I just can't believe, well, we couldn't find anybody to buy it for nothing. So, and take a tax write-off on it. I just don't buy all that. I don't know why they would destroy so many animals, particularly when there's so many other places in the world that are having, supply problems.
Exactly.
And none of it makes real sense. I've tried to...
Trying to create a food shortage. Trying to do a man-made food shortage by killing all these things, dumping crops, dumping dairy, all sorts of things. You know, one of the things I heard recently, you know, that their mad scientist stuff is in these vaccines, they're trying to make it to where people don't have a tolerance to red meat. As part of it, you know, to serve their other agenda. So, oh, you don't have a tolerance to red meat. Well, then no more meat production for you guys. I mean, whatever they're doing, none of this is natural. It's all concocted, and it's all mad scientist time. How is this still going on? We don't know. Much information has come out every day, every minute. That Daszak, did the Daszak step down, Mitch? What happened with that Daszak guy? Fauci's partner.
Well, they're playing us with our ignorance and our appetite. They're using both things on us. Since we're addicted to certain fomites, and I'm going to use the term fomite, carrier of disease, and our ignorance, they utilize that. They say, when you're getting infected by social contact, well, if that's the case, I probably killed a lot of people because I would go along, pick up a hand, check for a pulse, put my hand up on the sternum, check for breathing rhythm, even heartbeat rhythm, then touch their forehead, then go to the next patient in the same room or ward.
Are you trying to compete and with only... Hillary Clinton, Tom? No, that's a joke, Tom. Hillary Clinton thinks she killed more people. So you trying to take her title? No, seriously, though, look, back to the meat. There's a burger joint in every corner of America, a pizza place and all sorts of meat products everywhere you look. We're definitely a Western nation that loves our meat products. So there's just a lot more businesses out and of course, consumption. You know, what are people going to do? They make the joke of Soylent Green, but it's almost like that's what they're ready to do. Can I lose you?
We got about 2 minutes. Closing thoughts, Tom and Brew?
I'll let you guys finish it off.
All right. Is Tom still here? I don't see Tom still in the call.
Tom dropped?
No, he's here. I just... I don't hear him, though. I hear the phone ringing. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening tonight. Tom Rogers and talking about all the different ways and the pathways that we get sick from. And of course, whether it's a estrogen transfer to our system, testosterone. Oh, there he's calling back. Here, let me merge it real quick. There we go. There you are, Tom.
Yeah, we got dropped.
We got about a minute left. Why don't you close us out, Tom?
Well, anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to come on and spread more pain. And the truth is really rough. But anyway, please go to gassingamerica.com. If you have any questions, please call me. I'd be honored to take anybody's call. I'll wrestle with anybody. And just look at nature, look at reason. And all the stuff we've been told is just poppycock.
Yeah, the answer is right in front of us, Mother Nature. And the world has, we've watched it for years, for a millennium, and for sure. Well, everybody, have a great night. I guess we've got to go. Next show's up. God bless y'all. Good night.
Thanks.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Bruce. Y'all have a great evening.
Listening to Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hand of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course of...